and welcome to another episode of Chillin' in the State House, your favorite source of State House news in podcast form. I'm Jason Alatid, one half of the Topeka Capital Journal's State House team.
And I'm Jack Harville, the other half.
And we're joined by John Hanna of the Associated Press.
Yes, yes, yes. How are you all doing?
Good, because we found out that we are award-winning for the second year in a row.
Yes, but we got second place, so we must have been kneecapped by the Russian judge.
We don't actually know where the judge is from, but...
That's a figure skating analogy there, folks. There was always, back in the day when you'd watch figure skating at the Olympics on ABC, there's always something hinky with the Russian judge who would kneecap the American champion or something.
We do have Olympics coming up this summer in France,
I think. In France. Paris, actually.
Where's Andrew to say something in French when you need him?
Yes, exactly.
But we are very glad to again get an award from the Kansas Press Association.
Yes, yes.
And I think the judge's comment was something like, we make dry legislative stuff sound chill.
Chill.
Or something
yes.
like that.
That it was like listening to a conversation from guys on the front porch.
Yeah. So
I don't know what does that mean that we sound like a bunch of old coots?
Yeah, maybe it wasn't intended as a compliment. We don't know. But if you're listening to us, hopefully that
hopefully it's more learned conversation than Grandpa Simpson.
But. And also get off our lawn.
Yes. Yes.
But the big news this week is that Taylor Swift is coming out with a new album.
Indeed, Friday, isn't it? The
yes.
Tortured Poets
Department.
Department, yes.
And so for this, we'll call it the Tortured Reporters Department, because we were very tortured Friday.
Yes, we were, with anticipation.
What was it, like 24 bills the governor had a deadline to either sign or veto or allow to become law without her signature?
Yes, and I got to say, it interfered with my sugaring appointment there, her veto of the deregulation of sugaring. So, you know.
As
got to have those smooth legs for the pool, you know.
As per usual, the governor's office did their Friday afternoon news dump of vetoes. That's the way they do it. And so we did our best to pre-write on the major things. And I'd say the two major vetoes to come down Friday afternoon were on the gender-affirming care bill.
Yes.
And I lumped them as one, but it was really two bills on anti-abortion related stuff.
Right. Well, obviously the bill, it was a proposed ban on gender-affirming care for minors, the treatments, puberty blockers, hormone treatments, and surgery for anybody under 18 would be banned, although doctors would have until the end of the year to transition patients who are on hormone treatments and the puberty blockers off of them.
And that piece was an important one. It wasn't in the original version of the bill, but it got added in through conference committee because apparently kicking kids off of gender-affirming care treatments cold turkey was the hang-up for a particular legislator.
Well, yes, Senator Brenda Dietrich, a Republican from Topeka, she ended up voting for it. When it passed, it had 27 votes. So it now appears to have two-thirds majorities in both chambers. Of course, that depends on two things. That depends on somebody not switching back to no. And that also depends upon everybody being there in the House and the Senate.
Which has been difficult because there's a particular Republican lawmaker who has been absent, I believe, due to health issues.
Yes, yes. So that is an issue. So those are calculations, and they will also have to make those calculations on the two abortion bills, which we'll get to. And there's been a pretty broad discussion of these. I don't know how much detail we need to go into. The governor got, would you say snarky, Jason, in the veto message? I think what she said was that they're picking on a small population. She didn't use that phrase. And if legislators focused as much time on the rest of the students as they on the remaining 99.2% or whatever was, I can't remember the number, but it was more than 99%. If they'd spent their time focused on the rest of the students, we'd have the best schools on earth. That was her comment. And that she can't believe, she said, that the legislature would want to get in between parents and their kids and impinge in her mind on parental rights like this. And of course, we should note that one conservative senator, Mark Steffen, in voicing his support for this bill, did mention part of the problem being, in his phrase, wayward parents. So,
well, and thinking of the parental rights piece of it, Representative John Epley, who's running for the Senate, he was a key opponent in past years.
Yes,
but last year he had either change of heart or change of mind this year, and he said part of it is because he no longer adopts the view of it infringing on parental rights and the parental and patient relationship with the doctor, and that it's an appropriate area for the government to step in.
Well, and yes, and his support for this version was pretty instrumental in bringing a bunch of House members around to get it toward the two-thirds majority.
I mean, Republicans needed to pick up 12 votes.
And they did.
And they picked up all 12 that they needed through a mix of resignations and getting in new members, and then other members flipping from last year.
So we'll see how this goes at the end of the month. In terms of attempting to override the veto, most certainly if the veto is overridden, there will be some sort of court challenge. There has been in multiple states. There are now about 24 states that have this some sort of restrictions or ban on gender-affirming care for minors.
Now, it's 2024. We're, what, 18 months removed from the Value Them Both vote?
Yes.
And we now have two anti-abortion bills that made it to the governor, and both got vetoed. And Jack, you wrote about those.
Yeah. The first being a questionnaire that asks why someone is getting an abortion. I think there are 13 other questions, but that seems to be the one that stuck out and had some questions that Democrats considered invasive. Asked about home life and potential abuse at home. Things like that. And Laura Kelly, when vetoing, she did bring up Value Them Both, and that there continues to be abortion laws every year after that, new abortion laws every year after that. But it passed with a supermajority. So it's – unless there's some flipping, it's – probably going to become all.
And John, are the
also probably will end up in a court challenge.
Are the arguments on it basically, supporters say the state should have more information about why patients are seeking abortions, because maybe that information could be used to better build up services for people who might otherwise not seek an abortion if they had more support?
Well,
and opponents, as Jack said, see it as invasive.
Sure. And look, and this ties into the second bill, which is makes it a specific crime to coerce somebody into having an abortion. And the argument is that it might help with prosecuting trafficking, human trafficking. But the governor said it's already a crime to threaten and try to coerce somebody into doing something. The issue, I think, more for abortion rights supporters, and this is a general theme that you get in the abortion debate, is that for abortion rights supporters, this sets up a narrative or reinforces a narrative, and it's a narrative that's been out there for decades, that women and girls really don't want to have abortions. If they had all the information, the argument goes, they wouldn't make that choice, that they're being rushed into it or pushed into it by others, that they really don't want to make that choice.
And it's not just information, it's also resources. We've seen
Sure.
Bills to support anti-abortion counseling centers or crisis pregnancy centers. Well,
and that's actually one of the issues. If they had this information about why patients are getting abortions, they said, well, we could target stuff. We could target resources to help them if their concerns are economic. Well, of course, what they would probably end up doing is giving more money to these to the anti-abortion counseling services who give away services for free, we should add, as opposed to, for example, some kind of broad government social services program. So,
or Medicaid expansion.
Or Medicaid expansion.
Point to.
Yes. And so the argument from abortion rights people is that what they're trying to do is reinforce a narrative that then allows them to go and give money to what critics call the soft side of the anti-abortion movement. I mean, had one scholar call it the anti-abortion industrial complex. You know, this kind of billion-dollar fundraising machine, at least in this person's view.
The state funding for it is $2 million.
Yeah, in terms of the state budget, hardly a blip, frankly.
And we can imagine a line item veto to come on the budget once it gets to the governor.
Yes, and that was overridden last year. And then there's also another bill that is, I think it's on the governor's desk right now, is a tax up to $10 million in income tax credits a year for donors to the centers. Also, a sales tax exemption on what those centers purchase. So, for example, if they go out and buy diapers to distribute, free diapers, other baby supplies, car seats, even clothing, stuff like that, all of those are things that typical center might have in stock, they would get a sales tax exemption.
And I think it's actually a $5 million. It's capped at $5 million.
Yeah.
It's a 70% reimbursement rate, which for charitable organizations is quite.
That's for the donors, though.
Yeah, for the donors.
Right, and you're right. It is limited. One donor can't get more than $5 million in a year. It is for 70%. So if you give $1,000, your credit is $700, which is a pretty good deal. It would, I remember talking with the folks at the Insight Service in Lawrence, and one of the things they saw that could happen if this tax credit became law is they might get more donations, and they were thinking about setting up some kind of shelter house for trafficked women who come out of trafficking. There's kind of an overlap here, these groups. They do also anti-abortion stuff, services to kind of support people so they won't have abortions. But then they're also over here working in the trafficking. And the argument goes that you get into situations where women and girls who are trafficked get forced and pushed by the traffickers into having abortions.
Well, and it, at least noteworthy to me, is last year they appropriated $2 million. The state treasurer's office bid it out.
Yeah.
Because they put it under the state treasurer instead of under the Department of Health and Environment. And it went to a group led in part by Tim Huell Scamp, the former congressman and former state legislator.
Yeah, former state senator.
Part of the RFP and the contract said that the treasurer's office could request status reports every quarter.
And Jason, have they done that? You were looking into that.
As of when I last filed a Quora, which I think was mid or late March, there were no such reports, no status reports.
Yeah, so we'll be watching for, I think, veto overrides. I think the sense is that there is enough support, big enough anti-abortion majorities to override those vetoes as there were last year. The coercion bill, it would be interesting to see whether a legal challenge evolves to that, but I'm pretty sure the reporting thing will be swept up into some sort of legal challenge. I mean, nobody has said that explicitly, but based on the abortion rights people, the clinics and the ACLU and all that, based on their past history, it would not be a shock to see a legal challenge.
Now, we did have several other vetoes to write about on Friday, or that sugaring. We might not have actually made it to writing about quite yet.
I had to explain to an editor what sugaring was.
Yeah,
it sounds messy. I'm not, despite my joke at the top, I've not ever been sugared, nor do I know someone who's been sugared, nor have I been present when sugaring has been done.
But John, would you go to an unlicensed provider of sugaring for any hair removal services?
Well, you know, see, that's the interesting thing. This is a debate that's been out there. Would you go, for example, to an unlicensed barber? The argument for getting rid of these regulations is that if you go to a barber shop, you get a bad haircut, you look around, you don't think it's clean enough, you just don't come back, and the market decides. Well, okay. In her veto message, maybe it wasn't in her veto message, but the problem with sugaring is you can rip and tear skin, right, if you do it wrong.
Well, I mean, even a barber can nick an ear or something.
Right. I mean, that would be my argument for regulation is maybe I want the person who has sharp implements around my head to have some training.
In the case of sugaring, you'd have materials around your genitals potentially.
Okay, that's an image I didn't need, but... Well, I guess that's like a bikini wax, right?
Right. I mean, so one thing about our citizens' legislature is we have legislators who have professional experience in a plethora of industries, and the House has, I believe, two licensed either barbers or is it esthetician?
I don't know what the word is. They have cosmetology licenses?
Yes. And one of those licensed cosmetologists is also a licensed cosmetology trainer. So we have people with professional expertise in the area. Yeah, both of them happen to be Democrats. Mike Amix of Lawrence and...
Yes, his barber shop, his family barber shop has been it was downtown, I think it still is, forever, ever and ever.
And then I can't remember which one of the three Millers, Silas Miller. Wichita.
Yes.
And so they both spoke against.
And if you met Representative Miller, you would think his specialty would be piercings and tattoos.
Well, so... sorry, John.
Sorry. I mean, I he's a cool guy. I mean, you know.
But... sugaring is a procedure for hair removal. It is currently...
It's an ancient Egyptian technique, isn't it? That's what I've read somewhere.
That's what I read, too, in the testimony of Representative Barb Wassinger, a Republican from Hayes who backed the bill. And so sugaring is a hair removal technique, but it is most often done below the belt. And... it is currently licensed or part of the licensing for cosmetologists, and this bill would make it not be licensed.
Well, so, and the Board of Cosmetology over the years has been a particular target of legislators. It started with hair braiding because there were people who were trying to braid hair at the Renaissance Festival and got busted because they didn't have a license. And then, what is it, threading? That was last year, wasn't it?
Which is another hair removal technique.
All of this seems to be around hair. I don't know what that tells us.
Well, part of it goes back to...
Part of it goes back to the fact that you and I had our dads give us bowl cuts at some point, or summer buzzes, right?
Buzzes in my case, yes.
Yes, I had the... This was the early 70s. I was not one of those cool little kids with long hair.
But I believe it's the Americans for Prosperity and the Kansas Justice Institute, some more libertarian groups who have promoted this as part of a wanting to deregulate professional licensure to make it more accessible to people who would want to start a business. And that's the case here. Right. There's a woman in Hayes who wants to start a business.
But doesn't want to.
Sued the state.
Right, yeah. Over, she doesn't want to have to do, 2,000 hours of training when I think the Justice Institute says that you can learn a sugaring technique and get it down in about an hour. There's the great Texas Observer columnist Molly Ivins once argued that a lot of these rules were meant to protect the people in the profession from others who wanted to get in. She had a hilarious column once about Texas considering a bill to license interior desecrators, people who were fond of ecru and mauve, I guess. In her mind.
And this wasn't the only regulatory-related bill that was vetoed.
There was a big kind of sweepy regulations one, wasn't there?
Yeah, so a bill supported by the Kansas Chamber, it kind of has two pieces. One is revamping the economic impact statement. And then related to that is if the economic impact on local governments, businesses, et cetera, would exceed $1 million, then the agency cannot proceed with that regulatory promulgation unless the legislature acts.
Well, now see, with the failure of the very narrow failure of the constitutional amendment on administrative regs, it would be interesting to me to see whether you can allow the legislature to step in under, whatever that ruling was back in the early 80s.
Well, so earlier we were talking about valuing them both and its failure, and now the legislature
is striking like kind of a backdoor attempt to do roughly the same thing as that constitutional amendment by different means.
It was a much less talked about constitutional amendment also in 2022, but during the general election. And I think it was the last race or last election to be called by.
Right. And it was actually pretty interesting because there was a coalition of abortion rights people who also mentioned that amendment as a threat. And Governor Kelly, when we asked her about it, said it would basically, I can't remember how she put it, but the gist of it was no administrative agency would have any administrative power in her mind to do very much of anything. I think legislators are frustrated that they have so little power over the administrative state. Of course, if they don't like a regulation under this court ruling, what they have to do is they have to pass a bill, which then, of course, you have to either get the governor's signature or a 2/3 majority to override a veto.
Yeah, so for that background, it was the 80s. I think Stephan might have been
Bob Stephan, the late attorney general, I think the longest serving Kansas attorney general ever.
Yeah, the legislature passed a law giving themselves a legislative veto over administrative regulations. The Kansas Supreme Court said, you can't do that. That's a violation of separation of powers. Regulations are an executive branch thing, so the legislative branch can't veto an executive branch action in that way.
And what's interesting is...
And voters in November 2022 elected not to change that.
Right. And what's interesting is that this is actually a much more burning issue. It is a burning issue here, but it's really a burning issue at the federal level where Congress doesn't fill in all of the blanks when it passes a law. And there was a case back in the day called Chevron. It's known as Chevron deference. You defer to the agency interpretation of the law, the courts do, and now that is being challenged. And Neil Gorsuch, the justice, one of the Trump justices, has been a big critic of the Chevron deference. And there's this idea this discussion out there about how much deference you give the administrative state, because while ultimately all those people work for the governor who is elected, none of them are elected. And of course, the legislature is all elected. So the issue is, in a 90-day session, you're not a legislature is not going to be able to think of every contingency. And in some cases, they're not going to want to go into the knotty details of how things are going to run under a less specific law. So they leave it to the agencies, and then the agencies do things, and occasionally legislators will say, well, wait a minute, we don't like that. Or why are you, you know, again, the Board of Cosmetology, why are you requiring different sinks for hair washing and something else? You know, in a small town, that's not feasible. All kinds of stuff like that comes up. If you want to make people mad, start talking about the required stickers on the side of an EMT ambulance.
So we'll see what happens, and if lawmakers can override it, and if they do override the veto, if there will be any kind of legal challenge, and if it will fare any differently later.
I'm sure there will have to be a regulation that somebody cares about to spawn a challenge. So, anyway.
Then, Jack, you wrote about the ban on plastic bag bans.
Ban on plastic bags.
And not just plastic bags. I mean, plastic straws and other
to-go carriers. I think there's some materials that it outright prohibits you from prohibiting as a city.
And for our Lawrence listeners, they might care more particularly about this issue.
Yeah, as the one city that has actually done it, I believe Wichita and Topeka have also considered it at public meetings, but have not really wanted to go forward.
Well, you know, what's funny is one of the places that Donald Trump has consistently made kind of a populist appeal is on all this environmental stuff, low flow toilets and showers, and plastic straws. He was really big on stuff that banned plastic straws, talking about, have you ever tried to drink out of one of those cardboardy straws that go soggy? And I guess the Trump folks have, as everything with the Trump campaign, they've managed to monetize it. I think you can get MAGA straws now. There is that. But
all right, so this bill would essentially say no to local control over this issue.
The legislature is in favor of local control until it's not, as they say. The argument is the old patchwork quilt argument, that it makes it just a little harder for businesses with multiple locations to operate. It's a little extra cost, and when your margins are pretty thin, as they often are in the restaurant business, this creates a little bit of a hurdle that discourages.
Well, and I would also think a great example would be Dillon's grocery stores having to have a paper bag instead of a plastic bag in one store, but different in another. But I think back when Wichita was considering it under their more Democratic city council, I seem to recall Dillon's, Kroger now, being more invested in trying to find a way to make that
look,
work.
The problem with plastic is every bit of plastic ever manufactured on this earth is still here in some form. A lot of it is little tiny pellets at the bottom of the sea that that aquatic life are swallowing. It will probably all be here when the sun goes supernova and swallows the earth in whatever that is, 7 or 8 billion years from now.
I was thinking of this bill on Saturday. I was my wife and I went to the Tulip Festival at Ward Mead, Old Town. Whatever the name is, that's like 3 blocks from where I get off the interstate to come to work. They had a tulip festival, and at one point while walking the path, I heard a rustling and looked up, and there was a plastic bag caught in the tree.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I am not quite old enough to remember the advent of plastic. I'm sure it was seen as a miracle, the first plastics. It made things lighter and – And, you know, you didn't have to worry about dropping your milk jug and breaking the bottle and spilling milk all over. So there was, or Diet or Coke or whatever. I mean, you know, just in the same way that leaded gasoline was a miracle because it stopped engines from knocking, and Freon was a miracle because it made everything. By the way, the same guy who came up with leaded gas came up with Freon. So he was like a double environmental disaster. When he died in the 40s, he was hailed as this big hero. Interestingly enough, he had great mobility problems, and so he rigged up his bed with a pulley system, and he died when he inadvertently strangled himself. But, of course, now we know what kind of environmental damage both of those things have wrought. And, you know, plastic is getting to be much the same way, just as the internal combustion engine was a great advance because, of course, back when it was all horse, you had huge, huge, huge piles of horse manure in cities.
Did the State House have horse hitching posts or something? Like
I bet they did. I bet they did. I bet they had. And we've seen pictures of what look like outhouses.
Maybe that's why the grass is so green here.
Yes.
Much more green than my lawn.
we could talk a lot. We can make a lot of jokes about how green the grass is at the State House and the amount of fertilizer produced in the building, right? That joke writes itself, doesn't it?
Well, the State House lawn is much nicer than mine.
Yes, which well, is they like tend a it.
Garden.
Yes, mine. I would spray weed killer on my lawn, but then I'd have nothing but dirt. I think. I'm not a lawn person. I'm not one of those. Have you ever had a neighbor who like lies on his side and plucks out the irregular blades of grass? One of those. Those people are the most annoying people to have as neighbors. I dyed grass. Speaking of grass.
Well, I was going to say, speaking of, you said environmentally damaging, I think might have been the term you used. I was thinking for a different bill, culturally damaging or damaging to youth. I'm talking about the pornography bill.
The pornography bill, which you called it. You predicted she would let it become law without her signature, the governor.
There was a,
because there's something in a governor that quails at the thought of protecting the right to unfettered access to pornography,
especially for
online
children.
Especially, although I can't imagine any computer savvy 15-year-old having much trouble getting around this, but shall see.
So the bill and now law effective July 1st would require pornography websites to have some form of age verification.
Right, and I think in some states they've just basically, like Utah or Alabama or a couple of states, Texas has done this. I think they've just basically put up a note because, you know, they know where you are, where your computer is by the ISP address. So they can just say, well, you're from X state, so.
And the age verification is to keep children from accessing porn.
Right.
And you're right, Texas is one of the states that has done this. Initially, a federal court sided with Pornhub, saying that this was an unconstitutional restriction on free speech. But then a federal appeals court sided with the state. And as a result, Pornhub has pulled out of Texas and blocked access to everyone there, unless you use a VPN that masks your location. And because of that, some Democratic lawmakers here said that this bill is essentially sponsored by VPN companies.
The American VPN Association, the VPN Operators Association. There's got to be an association.
And some Democrats, I mean, I won't say all, because there were definitely some Democrats who voted for the bill, but others saw issues with it, such as if you are going to have age verification requirements that mean – that could mean sending your driver's license or your social security
number. Right, who gets that information? Where do they keep it and how secure is it?
And while the bill now law says that those third-party age verification places aren't allowed to keep that information. If you're using, if the website uses some company outside the U.S., would they just ignore that law and now sell your information to someone?
You know, it's almost like this is intended to discourage everybody from using porn without going through the trouble of banning porn, which might or might not have First Amendment consequences or challenges. That, you know, if you wanted to pass a law just to ban porn websites in Texas, that would be very hard to do and get upheld. But, you know, they've managed to block access to Pornhub for pretty much everybody in Texas, unless, again, you go through the trouble of getting a VPN, which...
Or if you use the dark web.
The dark web.
And some legislators said we should not be encouraging children to find the dark web.
Yeah, because then you can become a white supremacist porn addict. I think the phrase for that is incel, maybe. Is that
joke? But I believe the bill passed unanimously in the Senate and had a pretty big supermajority in the House.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if she had vetoed it, there would be almost – near certainty that it would have gotten overridden. So she waited the 10 days and let it become law without her signature. You know, will there be a court challenge? We don't know yet. All this stuff that all these court challenges and legal issues raised by things that were just not around when I was a kid.
So... we talked about the vetoes and the bill that became law without a signature, but the governor had what, like a dozen, maybe two dozen bills with deadlines of either Friday or Monday.
And speaking of tortured reporters,
you both had to write.
I actually wanted to write a work. That's how sick I am. I wanted to write a workers' comp story. No, back in the day, 30 years ago, 1993, workers' compensation was the hot issue. And it was a hot issue because insurance premiums for businesses had skyrocketed. And then in the midst of all that, you had all these mini scandals where white-collar officials got these, because workers' compensation is based on what you earn, your benefits, they got these huge payouts because you can take it in one lump sum. So the one I remember is the former insurance commissioner, a guy named Fletcher Bell, wrenched his back, supposedly lifting the briefcase, a heavy briefcase out of the trunk of his car, almost $95,000 in a lump sum. People were mad. A colleague and I did a story about insurance claims managers whose jobs it was to deny claim after claim after claim from workers, and or at least, you know, keep the costs under check. And then they had some of these white collar claims. And there was one, I won't say her name, but there was one that was so notorious in the industry that they talked about it at like their annual conventions. And I think the story quoted somebody saying as basically, oh yeah, we all know about that one. You know, basically the implication being we're trying to figure out how this person got away with it. So yeah, it was a huge topic back in the day, but the result of years of changes was a sense amongst labor groups and trial lawyers that the system had become horribly skewed toward employers and against workers. And of course, the deal is you are in theory guaranteed benefits under formulas in the law, and for that, you give up your right to sue.
Well, normally you think of lawmakers as actually writing the laws. In this case, it was more so lobbying groups, both business groups and labor groups.
Basically, eight attorneys, four from each side, got together and wrote a bill.
And gave it to lawmakers and said, please don't touch it.
And they didn't.
Passing it.
And the result of that is the caps on total lifetime benefits are going up. I think the death benefit, a top death benefit, goes from $300,000 to $500,000. Permanent if I'm thinking the term right, permanent partial disability. It goes from total lifetime benefits of $155,000 to, I think, $400,000. So it really is. And Kansas has had some of the lowest caps on lifetime benefits in the nation. So,
and thinking of other bills that passed, for our local Topeka listeners, you may remember when Zoe Felix was killed in October.
Yes.
There is a state law that allows open records requests to get a summary of a child death, where DCF has to provide a summary of any reports involving the child. But under the law, DCF had to provide that within 7 days after they made a determination that the child died from abuse and neglect.
Yes.
So in Zoe's case, she died October 2nd. A suspect was charged October 5th. But it wasn't until, it was in the teens.
Yeah, it was just over two weeks
released that summary. And at the time, DCF was saying, the secretary, Laura Howard, was saying there's this bill we've backed in the past that would allow us, would require us, DCF, to release the summary once a suspect has been charged. And the reason there's that delay is sometimes DCF backs off on its own investigation while police do their criminal investigation. But that delay means that there might be speculation from the public, maybe some upset protesters outside the state house who don't know what DCF knew and when they knew it. And so the new law will make it so that way, should another child die again in the future and a suspect is charged, then there won't be as long of a delay in getting that summary. But it doesn't change the piece on releasing the full reports, which we are not getting in Zoe's case because DCF did not consider her to meet the definition of a child alleged to be in need of care.
Yeah, that is actually a somewhat technical definition, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, the fact that she was homeless and living with her father and I think stepsister in a tent on a vacant lot was not enough to have her declared a child in need of care.
Well,
homelessness in and of itself is not.
Right. But so a child in need of care is a specific statutory term involving going to court to declare a child in need of care as part of the state taking custody of a child. And Zoe was never in state custody.
Right.
And alleging that she was in need of care also would have counted, but in DCF's determination, they view alleged to mean at the point a prosecutor or the county or district attorney goes to court.
Well, and now all of this is...
And not when a neighbor calls up DCF to allege that she's in need of care.
Right. And now, of course, all of this is tied up in the capital murder case against Michael Cherry, who is accused of killing her.
And one more to talk about quickly. There is a new law to repeal old laws on required audits.
Yes.
Several required audits, some involving CAPERS, 911, and then economic development ones. And there wasn't much pushback against this bill.
To repeal the – don't these subsidies have to be reviewed every 3 years, audited every 3 years?
Well, that's the way it was that every economic development program, incentive program, subsidy program.
Subsidies. They're subsidies. Let's call them what they are. They're subsidies. They're giveaways.
The law required every 3 years those had to be audited by the legislature's nonpartisan auditing arm. And as part of a broad repeal of a bunch of statutorily required audits, the thought was there's limited resources by auditors, and some of those audits are not super useful anymore.
Yeah.
So it would free them up to do other audits that legislators want. So legislators can still request audits of these EcoDevo programs. But to skeptics of subsidy incentive programs, there's no longer a required audit every 3 years for each of these programs.
Well, and what's interesting is the history of this is the state used to have an independently elected auditor like Missouri has, as opposed to the Division of Post Audit, which we should say has a really good reputation for the work it does. But it's recommendations for what it audits and all of that still comes from a legislative committee because it's an arm of the legislature. Back in the late 60s, early 70s, they thought that this would be more effective at auditing the state auditor's office. I was not there, but I'm told it kind of became just like a do-nothing job. You could get away with doing nothing in it, and apparently somebody who'd been in there a long time had not done much with it. Now you look at a state, for example, like Missouri, where the auditor's office can be actually fairly aggressive and it's independently elected. So, you know, this was a way to get a more aggressive auditing, more thorough auditing agency. But I just throw that out there. There are states that do it differently.
Well, it's Monday of Tortured Poets Department week.
Yes.
For us tortured reporters. We do expect some more bill signings of whatever.
Yeah, everything pretty much has to be on our desk by the end of today, I think. Because the last business day, although they went into the early morning hours of August. Boy, I'm getting ahead of myself. A cruel, cruel summer, I guess I'm anticipating.
April 6th. Was that intentionally a Taylor Swift?
Yes, it was intentionally. We're going to start substituting Disney references for Taylor Swift references now that I've been listening to Taylor Swift.
Well, you can listen to the Taylor Swift concert tour movie on Disney Plus.
Yes. 3 hours. Although you said it kind of flies by, right? It's quite something.
I enjoyed it. I also happened to fall asleep in the theater during the
Swifties are going to come after you, dude.
Yeah. My wife was not pleased, but it was during the Folklore and Evermore moments, which are my favorite eras.
Right. But if you have trouble sleeping, you listen to that.
Yeah, and it's just because to me it's really calming music. Not
really calming.
I don't consider it
boring. What I noticed was, as I told you, I was listening this morning, listening to a curated playlist on Spotify. It's really weird because it's like you have one song where she's clearly deliriously in love and we'll be together forever, blah, blah. And then the next song on the list is the "You Dirty Dog, You Did Me Wrong" song, you know? So it's just kind of jarring back and forth.
Well, after your introduction to Taylor Swift, do you have a favorite song?
Oh, I don't. I really did like Cardigan. I told my daughter that I like some of the earlier stuff.
The more country stuff.
I feel like a song like "I Knew You Were Trouble When You Walked In" could be like the theme to many a legislative debate.
Or "You Need to Calm Down."
"You Need to Calm Down." That's also a good theme for this building.
Or with veto session coming up, "Are You Ready for It?"
Yeah, that's also another good theme for this building. Certain
politicians might like "The Man."
Yes, yes. We really need to get started on State House the Musical, don't we? We need to get that up and going toward Broadway.
Yeah, at this point, it might as well be State House the Taylor Swift Musical.
Yeah, maybe we can collaborate with T Swift on this. And I mean, if they can do a musical about corn in New York, I think we can have a Taylor Swift musical. I did see that musical, by the way. It's called Shocked. But
maybe we can get some karma too.
Some karma, yes. Yeah.
Well, if you would like to listen to back episodes of award-winning
in between Taylor Swift songs, you can do that.
Wherever you found this podcast, you can find our back episodes. And Jack, if people would like to read your work, where can they find it?
They can find it at CJ Online. I'm on Twitter, but I don't use it.
I am also on Twitter, but have used it less and less. KS Ledge Twitter is not as active as it once
was. You know, it's really interesting that the old guy here uses Twitter the most. Is that a sign that Twitter is becoming uncool? That somebody my age is using it more than you young people?
Well, I still think you're using it less than you used to.
Yeah, I am. But I'm at APJDHan on X, I guess it's called now.
Maybe if people are spending less time on X, they're spending more time on CJOnline.com.
Yes, that's true. Or listening to Taylor Swift. And my stuff, if you want to read my stories, apnews.com/author/ John, J-O-H-N hyphen Hannah, H-A-N-N-A.
Well, are you going to be working Friday or listening to the new era?
You mean one can't do both? Is that you enlighten me that era is her, does she say it era or era?
Era, I believe, because if you start the tour movie, it's Welcome to the Eras Tour.
Okay, and it's like that's what she calls each album, right? It's a new era.
To my limited Taylor Swift knowledge, yes.
Okay, well, I'll have to talk to my nieces about this because they're huge, huge Swifties.
I think my wife has Friday off of work because she worked this Sunday, so she's going to use her
sure
off
she
day
didn't do
to
that.
Listen to
didn't do that deliberately, Swift. Huh?
No, but it was a nice plus.
Yes, yes, yes.
All right.
Did early Beatles albums have this kind of furor when they were released? I wonder. I'll have to go find some people in their 70s and ask.
You're not quite that old.
I'm not quite that old.
Who was the big band when you were a kid?
Oh, let's see. Boston was really big when I was 12. The Rolling Stones were still pretty big. Unfortunately, when I was a young teenager, it was the disco era. So, like, you know, sadly, stuff like the Village People, not, yeah, I was a teenager at exactly the wrong time.
I would say that explains a lot, but I'm just saying that because I think it's funny, not because I actually think it explains anything.
Yes, yes, well. Anyway, we digress.
Did the people have a journalist in their little cadre?
No, they did not. They had a cowboy, a cop, a guy, guy who dressed in leather, like some guy in a Native American costume and like a construction worker, I think.
Practically a citizen legislature.
I doubt the Republican-led legislature would compare themselves to the Village People. YMCA. It's fun to stay in the... Yeah. Anyway, never mind.
Well, come back next time for John's take on the Tortured Poets Department.
Yes.
And until next time, think of your tortured reporters.
Yes, do that.